Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers have shored up that 14th roster spot heading into camp this week. We'll talk a little bit more about Anthony Davis and comments Rob Pelinka made about him heading into the weekend. And finally, ESPN has their NBA rank out. Are the Lakers a little too top heavy? We'll talk about it next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Spoiler alert, Andy, when the top is as good as what the Lakers have, the answer is no, but it does get to a lot of really interesting questions about the way the Lakers are constructed. We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll get to AD here in a second, but let's start with the Lakers and the 14th spot on the roster. Austin Reeves was signed on Sunday to a non-guaranteed two-year deal with an option for the second year that basically seals up what Rob Pelinka called the last little bit of housekeeping before camp opens on Tuesday. And it also means James Ennis will not be a Laker. I think that's the fundamental thing here.
God, is this humiliating for James Ennis? the amount of efforting that he's put in on social media just trying to get Rob Pelinka's attention. Then he actually has a workout with the Lakers. And I recognize that you can give Austin Reeves, the type of non-guaranteed contract that gives you way more flexibility when it comes to tax purposes versus James Ennis, presumably
right, probably wanting a guaranteed deal and all that.
Well, at least through November. he'd like to at least know.
Austin Reeves is put me on an hourly. I don't care. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. He'll actually punch a clock if that's what's necessary. But I do kind of feel bad for Ennis, and all joking aside, we've talked about this. I would have liked to have seen them add a true wing, a true three to this roster. It's something that they've oddly been lacking the last few seasons. But that being said, from everything we've heard, they've been very high on Austin Reeves. And he is the type of young guy that it would be nice to see them try to develop, particularly if they think he has that type of potential.
Yeah, here's the deal. If you don't think somebody like Ennis is playable, and I don't even mean playable, he can't step on an NBA court, but you're not going to give him enough playoff time or playing time to justify the presence. It's not even so much the waste of money. You can do the math. It's not that big a difference between, if Reeves, if he sticks around versus, versus Ennis. And presumably if they don't pay Reeves and they cut him or something like that, because the deal isn't guaranteed, they are going to pick up someone else. So if you're not going to get somebody who's going to play, I like the idea of taking a guy who is young, can develop. The Lakers have a good track record with that. They did it with Caruso. They've done it with THT. Their scouting department and their player development has been very good. And so, I trust their track record. And look, I'm not going to lie to the audience. I have never seen Austin Reeves play basketball ever. Once the Lakers traded that pick, Andy, in the Westbrook deal, I aggressively did not watch Summer League. Because nothing was going to happen there that, unless there was a total catastrophe, was going to impact this season in the slightest. And I decided to spend time with my children instead. I've never seen the kid play, but I just conceptually I'm on board here.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's not particularly off base from anything you would be expecting, other than say a veteran wing, a James Ennis type, who, right, I guess is going to have to look over some rosters in the NBA and figure out who to start liking on social media now.
The Lakers can't possibly be the only team that at least kicked the tires on James Ennis. And anyway, he's not going to be a Laker anytime soon. So that's that. Clears up the final little bit of roster housekeeping before Tuesday.
He's got a lot of hearts to undo now.
I know, seriously.
He's got to erase that social media trail.
Poor guy. Let's turn to this, though. We did a lot of our show for Thursday was a response to Rob Pelinka's press conference that he did, talking to you sort of pre-camp. And we got to a lot of stuff. One thing we didn't get to, though, was Anthony Davis, who I believe got married. Was it this weekend? Congratulations.
Something like that. Either last weekend or the one before. A lot of pictures, a lot of teammates there. Frank Vogel was there. Pelinka, yeah. Seems like there was a pretty good purple and gold
Montrezl Harrell not there.
No.
made a point of not being that tight with AD on social. But anyway, so Pelinka was asked, though, at Thursday's press conference about AD. And you and I have noted a few times over the course of what has been an incredibly busy summer for the Lakers that one guy who has not been talked about a lot is Davis. So here are a couple things that that Pelinka said. He referred to him as a quiet worker. He goes about his business. He's been in the building, and I can tell you all the work he's put in and how serious he is about it. Here's the important stuff. I think when you get into AD's mindset, there are two primary goals. One is to win a championship for sure. He talks about that with his team. And then two is that he knows he belongs to be in that conversation of the most dominant and the best two-way player in the game. I think he has the skills, and I think he is that player, and he worked very hard this offseason. I think you'll see him accomplish those two things with this season, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, the championship is something that they're all aspiring to, that they're talking about, that they think they should get. But the idea that Davis could emerge as the best two-way player in the game this year, that would be the goal, and that's something that he can achieve and something that he wants to achieve in a league with Giannis, is lofty. Even if he doesn't quite, that is a big goal to put out there and attach to Davis in a season after one where he was frankly disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, the flip side is we are not very far removed at all where from, you know, Anthony Davis, especially in the bubble, but even the entire season leading up to it, where there was a very strong argument to be made that he was the best two-way player in the game, certainly the most unique two-way player in the game. And in talking about the offseason, you know, there has been so much focus with the big three on LeBron and Russ. Russ because of the fit questions, and Russ is just a polarizing player in general, and LeBron is LeBron. LeBron lords over everything. But then there's been a lot of talk about the supporting pieces, and are they too old? Is there enough defense? Are they really going to finally have enough shooting? You know, THT has become his own conversation. Were it not for the conversation about Anthony Davis at center, which is not entirely, but in part a function of Russ's arrival, it's actually felt like nobody would be talking about Anthony Davis at all.
Right. That's an important conversation anyway, but I agree with you. The focus on it is in part a response to Westbrook's arrival. I mean, we would be less concerned about, okay, he can start, but as long as he's playing down, this it'd be like the conversation the last couple of years. If it happens in crunch time, it's enough. But yeah, you're right. Westbrook's arrival changes it completely. But that is basically the only thing we've talked about.
That's my point, is that, like, you know, regardless of how important you think that question of him at center is, because, you know, we've talked a lot about during this offseason, I actually think and thought that it was becoming a more important question even before Russ was of any of this, you know, before they make that deal. But it really has felt like if the center question was not being attached to AD, he wouldn't be talked about at all. But, like, for all the talk about how Russ and LeBron fit together, AD could ultimately be what really greases those wheels, you know, those two playmakers and how well they play off each other. You know, Anthony Davis can be a lot of that bridge work, but then defensively, he is what at their best makes the Lakers defense special, or depending on how concerned you are about the pieces that they lost this offseason and the defense that on paper they traded to upgrade the offense, which both of us have agreed was necessary, AD could be what just makes them championship enough. You know what I mean? Like, Anthony
Davis, if they have a top 5, 6, 7, 8 defense this year, it's almost impossible for me to conceive of that without Davis being dominant on that side of the ball. Like, you know, is he going to win DPOY Defensive Player of the Year? I don't know. I mean, it could be Giannis. It could be a lot of people. Like, that's not necessarily the measurement. It will help his candidacy. But if that, he's going to have to be that good for the Lakers to be that good. I can't see one happening without the other. Given what they gave up and given what they brought in. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't think that, you know, you made the point earlier. I don't think it's an unfair expectation. I don't think it's ridiculous or anything like that. It's just high. It's appropriate. He is the guy who I agree with you should benefit the most from the presence of Westbrook and the presence of LeBron in terms of on the court production. LeBron's going to benefit, I think, physically, maybe more than Davis will. But Davis is going to be now, you got two guys who can find you from anywhere, who will draw eyeballs from everywhere. And he can just go play. And, you know, I'm not saying he's not a leader, that he's not the, but he doesn't need to be the guy who brings the energy in drab January games. That's Russ. I'm not saying Davis got to have to bring energy, but he doesn't have to be the guy who drives the team. He doesn't have to be the vocal leader and the face of the team. That's LeBron. Davis just has to go be aggressive, be dominant, and go kill people.
But you know what, though?
Just go do it.
Along those lines, though, he is, of their big three, the guy that I think audibly, you know, the guy that needs an audible kick in the ass more than LeBron or Russ.
I agree.
And I don't want to say for sure that it was intentional by Rob Pelinka to say this stuff as a motivational device, you know, putting Anthony Davis, you know, out on Front Street doing this. But if it were, I would not be surprised at all.
No, and look, to be fair to AD, I think he understands that last year was not a good year for him. And I think he took a lot of pride. I think he's going to have the year this year that people like me thought he was going to have coming out of the bubble last year without and I didn't recognize the physical toll and just last year was just too weird for it. This year, though, he's had the offseason and he can come back and do it. So we'll see. You know, I'm really interested to see what he says on Tuesday about his, you know, setting expectations for his own season. That is one of the things I'm looking forward to in media day. I think we'll talk about that for Tuesday's show. I know we're going to spend a lot of time focused on what we want to hear, but that's definitely one of them. One other thing that came out of Pelinka's press conference, though, too, was this notion of sacrifice and this notion of understanding the collective goals here and that there are essentially more players than there is playing time. We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Sleeper. In 2018, fantasy sports experts at Sleepers realized that fantasy basketball was broken. Games were won and lost based on whose players had more scheduled games that week. It made no sense. It required very little strategy. So in 2020, Sleeper released a brand new way of playing fantasy basketball. It's called Game Pick, and it's available only on Sleeper. In Game Pick, owners pick a single game per week for each starter to count towards their team's total score, ensuring an even number of games played between opponents. So it means no more losing sleep because your opponent's players had more scheduled games to play once in before the week was over. No more giving up through the season because it feels like just too much busy work to maintain your team. And it's like, you know, I got a life. I don't have time for all this. But in Game Picks, you pick one game per week for each player based on player matchups, home versus away, opponent's defensive rankings, pace of play, yada, yada, yada. You can do redraft, keeper, dynasty. So if you prefer building out a weekly strategy instead of daily, boring, really aggravating busy work, you are going to love Sleeper. So download the Sleeper app, start a league with your friends today. You will not be disappointed.
Hey, Andy, does this sound familiar to you? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on your phone. You've got, you know, you're essentially an entertainment pirate, grabbing passwords here and devices there and sailing the high seas of piracy. I want to tell you about a simple way that you can get all that entertainment you love without the hassle and the guilt. It's a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream. It brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before. So you can watch all your favorite shows, sports, movies, TVs, all in one place. Watch all your TVs. That's different. That probably wasn't good, but that means no more juggling remotes for those TVs and devices and no need to buy another device ever again. The best part of it, Andy, there's no annual contract. So get rid of all the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more about it at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. A compatible device is required and content varies by package. It's a lot of TV. The word TV comes up a lot in that. So you can hardly blame me for getting on a roll there.
Blame you a little.
Well, DirecTV people will.
It's like the thousandth time you've done this.
I mean, it really doesn't matter what either one of us think. It's really up to them in their opinion. One of the things, though, that is going to be a challenge for Frank Vogel this year is figuring out who is going to play and when and how much and how often. And the Lakers clearly have more rotation caliber players, even without filling that 14th spot with a James Ennis type guy. They have more rotation caliber players and they have spots that can be reasonably used. Pelinka talked about that on Thursday, talked about shared sacrifice, talked about people understanding what the deal is. You know, Wayne Ellington was on, I saw this from our friend Silver Screen and Roll. He did an appearance on the Ball is Life's Noble and Roosh show and talked about that as well. Said, I think we have one of the older rosters, but guys are going to be mature about that. We understand that not everybody's going to be able to play 30 minutes a game. There's going to be sacrifice. There's going to be sacrifices that need to be made, and that's part of the understanding. We've heard Rondo talk about that. Kent Bazemore said he's going to have to compete. The Lakers seem to have been telling people like that nothing is necessarily guaranteed. Now, sometimes, Andy, people say, you know, say all the right things. They've been told that nothing is guaranteed, but they think that applies to the next guy on the roster as opposed to them. But I do get a sense that at the very least, you know, players understand that, okay, I might have been playing 25 minutes a night at my old city. That's probably not going to happen here.
Yeah. I mean, look, we talked about this a lot once the roster started shaking out and you started realizing how many established players were on there. Pretty much every single introductory press conference that we heard with these guys, I got the very specific, strong sense that they were told your role is going to be fluid. Are you cool with that? Like, there are six guys on this team that I think will have established you are playing every single game unless it is scheduled rest or injury. And that's the big three, LeBron, AD, Russ, Talen Horton-Tucker, Kent Bazemore, Kendrick Nunn. Those are the six guys that I think can reasonably expect to play 25 plus minutes per night on a regular basis unless right.
If things are going as expected.
Yeah, unless they are just dramatically underperforming. Like those are the six guys. Everybody else, I think it is going to be an evolving thing. And you get a sense from hearing them talk about it. You get a sense from hearing Rob Pelinka talk about it during Thursday's press conference.
Let me say this. Did you say Dwight? I think Dwight is a seventh guy who is reasonably penciled in between 15 and 20. You
know, see, I think it's going to be less. I think
well, 50, but, whatever it is, a 15 minute a role, whatever his role is minutes wise, he's going to do it every night.
Okay. I had said before, like 25 plus.
Sure,
minutes.
No, I understand. I'm just saying in terms of guys who I think will be on the floor in one way or another every night. Because I think other than Dwight, once you get past that, I agree with you. It could be some nights you see player X and some nights you don't. So I just wanted to throw that
out. I mean, I guess with Dwight, I was thinking more just the amount of minutes and also, too, like there could be certain matchups where it's dictated he's going to play very little. Mm-hmm. But the point being, though, like it's – hearing Rob, you know, use phrases like mindset a lot, you know, that they are very serious. They're locked into what they want to accomplish. I mean, there's a part of me that's wondered with some of these guys, when you look at where Carmelo Anthony is in his career, when you look at where Trevor Ariza is, Wayne Ellington, I think these guys would all play every night, and they certainly have no issue with playing every night. I wonder, though, if they are all dying to play every single game in this season. You know, like, I think they all want
to take some games here and there.
They all want to be a legitimate part of this. Like, I think they all want to be able to say, you know what, this team won a championship in 2022, and I played a significant role because of X, Y, and Z.
This team won a championship and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
You know, but
it's the opposite of that. But you know what? This is where the age of the team helps Frank Vogel because you can do the, you remember a couple of years ago, he would do things like, you know, Troy Dan, like he wants everybody to be playing a little bit. He wants everybody to feel like they have been in a game because you might need somebody, and you can't bring in a guy who hasn't played in 20 games and expect him to perform for three games when you need him. Like that's not fair. It doesn't matter who the player is. But, you know, so every fifth or sixth or seventh game, Quinn Cook would randomly play 17 minutes or Troy Daniels would randomly be in the rotation. like they'll do that this year. I would be surprised if they didn't. And you tell Melo, yeah, we're going to give you two games. It's probably okay. I agree with that. So I think that because again, he's 37 years old. I agree with you. I think this is where the age helps them as much as we like to focus on the dangers that come with it. If you're a coach who has to juggle a lot of dudes, this said though, that's easier to do in the first 60 games and harder to do as the season goes on and into the playoffs. Guys really do want to play, but if they're winning, it's going to be fine.
Well,
winning
is
the key. Winning is the key to all this.
Winning is the key to all this. But I think also too, once you're 60, 70 games in and you really are starting to get into the gearing for the playoffs section of the season and then the actual playoffs, most of these guys are going to understand why they are or are not playing.
I agree.
Doesn't mean they'll necessarily like it, but most of them will get it. Most of them will have a tangible reason in front of them why they have the role that they have in the playoffs. And again, they don't have to like it, but I think they're going to understand it. There's really only one guy that I look at and say that dicey is too strong of a word because once I explain who it is, he's too easily removed. But Malik Monk is the only guy that I look at in this equation when it comes to potentially fluid playing time where I could see him growing dissatisfied and unhappy with the situation.
Because on his future.
Right, exactly. All these other guys, they are at the way tail ends of their careers and they are really playing for just, again, the experience, being part of something bigger than themselves, because for most of them, they have accomplished everything either that they already have or already will in their career, and they just want the gravy, if you're talking about
life. Or there's somebody like you said, Bazemore, who is playing for another couple of years, and if he plays really well for the Lakers, he's probably not going to be back.
Sure.
But he's also, if things go well, will play 20 minutes, 25 minutes a night, and this won't be a problem.
Exactly. But, you know, guys like Rondo and Dwight Howard, they've got championships, they want more, but their careers are essentially settled at this point. Absolutely. Same with Trevor Ariza. You know, Carmelo wants that championship finally. DeAndre Jordan wants that championship. Wayne Ellington. Malik Monk is the only guy that I could see having an issue with this, and I hope that's not the case, but the truth is if he's really that unhappy, he'll likely do what Troy Daniels did in 2020 and ask to be released. And I'm sure the Lakers will accommodate him.
If it comes to that. Yeah, I mean, hopefully he won't. Hopefully he plays his role here. Let's do this real quick, because it was an interesting thing that came out with ESPN. They do it every year, and Sports Illustrated's done it. And for people who have followed us, you know, over the years on the different incarnations of our podcast and all these other things, that you know, radio, whatever, Andy and I don't care about, like, player rankings. We don't like arguing about like if somebody on the Lakers is the seventh best player or the eighth best player.
No, the most arguing we used to do at ESPN was asking them, do we have to do these ESPN ranks? Like, we used to actually try to get out of it. To our dismay, they always said, no. You have to do these write-ups, but we would do our best to argue. This is dumb.
It's stupid. Like, I believe in tiers. I think tiering players is a useful exercise, but like getting wrapped up in rankings is not. So yes, just to use ESPN's as an example, the Lakers have three guys in ESPN's top 30 for the NBA rank. Westbrook is 29th between CJ McCollum at 30 and Ben Simmons at 28. Anthony Davis is 9th between James Harden and Damian Lillard at 8. LeBron is 3 between Luka at 4 and Giannis at 2. Again, the point isn't, is this fair, correct, or not? I you want to argue with me that you know AD is better than Lillard? Okay, I don't care. It's fine. Lillard is really good.
You win.
Great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Wonderful and, argument you made, sir.
Right. You know, is Westbrook better than Ben? I don't care. Stop.
Now, actually, I would say Westbrook is better. Well, no,
he's much better, more productive. I'd rather have Westbrook. So the issue isn't like whether these rankings are right or wrong or whatever, but like it does get to something that's interesting about roster construction. The Lakers were top heavy last year. They are top heavy again this year. Certainly, I think probably more so. Gap between the Lakers' third best player and their fourth best player is pretty significant, I think, this year in terms of a ranking list like this. When you're constructing the roster, though, how much does that matter? We'll talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bars in the world. Bars covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, and they are healthy. They're great for health conscious people, whether you're trying to lose or maintain weight, but still want to eat something that tastes awesome. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They are great for the keto crowd. And as always, they taste, whether you're talking about the 12 original flavors like raspberry, coconut almond, salted caramel, banana bread, new flavors, including cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, cookies and cream. I love them because I love really unique, different, cool taste combinations. Not going to feel bored like you're eating the same thing over and over with Built Bar. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
So the question becomes not, are the Lakers like fatally flawed because they don't have like the third best player, the ninth best player, the 27th, the 29th best player, and the 46th best player. Like you got to, like, that's not it. Like when you have and this is the NBA, when you have 3-9, you are a title contender by definition. That's mm-hmm. just how this league works. They've added somebody with the sort of transcendent talent of Russell Westbrook, flaws notwithstanding. They are, but they are top heavier now because I would say the gap between potentially their star players and their role players might be a little larger this year than it was in years past, or certainly last year. We did learn last year that the rest of the guys matter and they can matter. We certainly saw that in the 2020 title year. For this team, how important is it, do you think, that gap between sort of the top three and the rest of the guys?
Okay, well, I was thinking about this, and the way I would frame it is this, Brian. Who would you say is the fourth best player on the Lakers?
Ooh. I don't know if there's a clean answer to that question because I think it depends on what you need on any given night.
Okay, well,
It might be Kendrick Nunn.
That is my answer. I would say that it's either Kendrick Nunn, or I would listen to an argument if you truly believe that the leap is coming for Talen Horton-Tucker. And, you know, the Lakers know this, hence the $30+ million that right. they just gave him, that he could be that guy. Like, I think Kent Bazemore may be more important in his own right, but I don't think that's better.
Right. I mean, there's the track record. But that's significant. Like, Kendrick Nunn fell out of the rotation in Miami last year.
Well, okay. But let's just say, for the sake of this argument, that it's Kendrick Nunn. Because I think in terms of sheer talent, production, and what has been established, it's probably him. Because Kent Bazemore may be more important in his own right than Nunn or THT. Right. But I don't think that's really what's being talked about here. So if it's Kendrick Nunn, how big of a gap would you say there is between Kendrick Nunn and the 10 players I'm about to name who were 90 through 100 on ESPN's rank? 90, Jordan Clarkson. 91, Derrick Rose. 92, Duncan Robinson. 93, Mitchell Robinson. 94, Jonas Valanciunas. Number 95, Kevin Huerter. 96, Jalen Green. A lot of respect for the rookie. Seriously? 97, Will Barton. 98, Steven Adams.
How I feel about Will Barton.
99, Danilo Gallinari. 100, Norm Powell.
We could do a whole podcast on how Will Barton's being just screwed here. But we
should have done that during one of the lesser busy days of the offseason.
I just love Will Barton.
How big of a gap do you – because I think that's really instructive in thinking about this.
It is, and I think – but the other question is, let's say, last year we would have answered this question. Is Kuzma the third best player? Is Montrezl Harrell? Is it Dennis Schroeder? Is it – like those guys – are at least more accomplished than
I'm guessing Dennis Schroeder is a top 100. I haven't looked.
But he would have been last year.
Sure. I think Harrell would have been too.
Absolutely. We're talking about these are guys who have won sixth man of the year. I mean,
or runner up.
Like, and so like that is significant. Are those most of those? I mean, a little apples and oranges with Valanciunas, for example.
Sure,
I mean,
but more. But again,
it's most of those broadly guys are, speaking, I would say most of those guys are better, or at least more accomplished, and have shown more than Kendrick Nunn.
Okay, well then, when you look at say Kendrick Nunn, or let's think about what could be the best realistic version of THT next season. Like, you know, somewhere between pie in the sky and better than he was last year, more reliable as a shooter, more reliable defensively, maybe a little bit more reliable with both. And think about that version of him. Think about Kendrick Nunn. And however big you think the gap is, I think between those two guys I just named and the 10 players 90 through 100 on this rank, I think that ultimately gives you the question, I mean, the answer to how big a deal is this? It's how big of a gap do you think there is?
Yeah, and it's, to me, it points to the importance of just like this the fit with Westbrook, finding something that makes this work and all that. It's just like, this is ultimately what's going to drive the Lakers' success. How good is Anthony Davis? We were talking about this. Is Anthony Davis going to be, if not the best two-way player in the NBA, or is he going to be the second best behind Giannis, which is hardly a crime, because Giannis is incredible. So if AD plays like a legit MVP candidate and the second best two-way player in the NBA, okay, is LeBron, you know, and if LeBron looks like the LeBron before he got hurt, where he was an MVP candidate, the pieces around become sort of the grease of the wheels, the thing that allow each of these big three to be a little bit better, to give the spacing for Westbrook to go downhill, to do, like, they become the enablers of the great talent to be great. The more you have to rely on them for featured roles, to step outside a comfort zone, to be something more than you hope they would be, you get in trouble. And if that happens, it probably means something's gone wrong with the big three, whether because of injury or fit or whatever. And things are probably in some degree of peril.
Yeah.
So it's important. But I do think the pieces they have in theory fit well enough together and are good enough that, no, I don't think it's that important because the talent of the big three is so good.
I mean, thinking about it. Yeah. I mean, thinking about it this way, and, you know, I don't have the, you know, 2019-2020 NBA ranking.
Right. And again, it doesn't matter.
I'm not arguing about
the numbers.
No. I'm not looking to argue about the numbers. I'm just saying, in terms of just thinking about different things as measuring stick templates.
Right.
For the championship team, other than Danny Green or maybe KCP, I doubt anybody other than LeBron or AD was in the top 100 for that team.
And that gets to my point. Like, why did they win? Because LeBron was playoff LeBron, like, you know, transcendent playoff, and AD elevated.
And everybody else, when it mattered, played their roles to a T.
And I would even argue in the case of certain guys, they didn't, maybe not all the way through the playoffs, but they had guys who exceeded. This is why some of these rankings are stupid, because, like, you know, if you're the 60th best player, the 70th best player, sort of in the aggregate, there might be a 3-week stretch where you play like 40. And there's a huge difference between 70 and 40 in terms of the amount of production that you're giving your team. If you're the 11th best player, the 12th best player, Paul George was an MVP candidate for, you know, like 2 months, a couple of years ago. Is he the best player in the league? No, he wasn't then either. But, like, he was 6 for 2.5 months. Like, that is different. It's a different deal.
Okay. Here's another way then to think about this, because what you're talking about with Paul George is ultimately, what are you capable of doing at your best? Because some guys at their best, you know, their ceiling is, again, using this as a broad template, 40 to 50 in the NBA, which is, by the way, really good. I mean, that's a really useful player for a contending team. But then you look at, like, Paul George. Paul George may not be consistently the 6th best player in the league, but
he's capable of being
right, being capable of doing that.
Yep.
So absolutely. With that in mind, do you think Kendrick Nunn could be capable of playing at times like number 75 on the list?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think they can get the production they need out of those guys as long as the big three are doing what they're supposed to do. And this is, you know, it's going to ebb and flow over the course of the playoffs. It's a really interesting way of thinking about this roster. And, like, one more thing, and we'll do this quick before we go. You know, there was a fun thing that went around this weekend. And just I point this out only as a reminder of how unusual this team is and the roster construction of this team. like there was a fun thing that was going around, you know, you and I were involved in the conversation, you know, Harrison Fagan, Anthony Irwin, a lot of the, you know, our buddies,
Sabrina Merchant
talking about like, you know, we've all seen the meme of like, this Lakers roster is like the greatest team from 2011 ever. Like, you know, it's like the 2011 All-Star team. But if you actually like a fun exercise for this team is if you go back and you just look at this roster and take 10 years off of everybody's age and make this the team, you actually can fill an entire team with incredible. And you have a 27-year-old Melo, 26-year-old Trevor Ariza, 22-year-old Bazemore, so old enough to play, Ellington at 23, 25-year-old Dwight, 26-year-old LeBron, DeAndre Jordan's 23, Rondo is 25, so that puts him in like all-star form, and Westbrook is 22. Like, that team is insane. And then, you know, you have THT, Monk, Nunn, now Reeves, guys like that covered by child labor laws and ineligible to play.
And Kentucky, you know, Anthony Davis.
And you have Kentucky Anthony Davis. Like, I can't think of another roster. I mean, forget the how good these guys would have been, that this team would just I take those nine guys to just throttle the league.
Right, oh my now. God, they destroy everybody.
In their primes, 25, 26, 27. Like, you have no depth, but that's okay. You don't need – Anthony Davis can be your
You got enough. Guy. You got a credible eight or nine man rotation. That's enough. They would kill. They'd kill the entire league, and it would not be close.
A lot of athleticism.
You've got MVP level. Just really quick, so just to make sure everybody knows where we're at, because I thought about this and I looked up where guys were approximately with their 2011-2012 NBA seasons. Mm-hmm. You've got LeBron and Dwight in MVP form. Like, it might have been a year where LeBron won the damn MVP, but both of those guys were in that discussion. Carmelo is playing at an all NBA level. Russ and Rondo were both literally all stars that season. Mm-hmm. Peak Trevor Ariza for his career as a high end role player. DeAndre Jordan and Wayne Ellington are serviceable role players. And again, I will take Kentucky Anthony Davis, who was only at Kentucky.
Bazemore was doing at 22.
Right, because the NBA would not allow AD to play that year. Otherwise, he would have been in the NBA. They are destroying everybody.
It's
without even trying that hard.
It's another way of thinking of this roster and how uniquely constructed it is and why everybody is having this conversation about age and this whatever, because the templates don't fit. You can't find you can find guys who have succeeded in their 30s and subtract them in their 20s, but find me a roster where you can actually field a team of like, so anyway, it was a fun thing that came up this weekend, and it was a good way of thinking about what we're in store for this week. So Tuesday, we'll get everybody ready for media day, some of the big questions that we're looking to have answered. Obviously, later in the week, we'll have all kinds of responses from what we see on media day and the early days of practice. I think they're like a week or something, or 10 days or whatever away from a preseason game. We're here.
If that long.
Something like that. So it's here.
No, it's like a week, man. It's a week. It's less than a week from this show.
Right. I mean, I'm going to get a chance to see Austin Reeves play. Exactly. I'm going to break the seal on that one. So make sure you stick with us every day. We are back into it every day, 5 days a week here on Locked On Lakers. Subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube, because that's where all the breaking news is going to go. And we're really excited. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.